This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Let's go! This is our home. We've got every generation. So full of music, a rhythm of its own design. This is my family, a perfect constellation. So many stars and everybody gets to shine. Whoa, let's be clear, Abuela runs this show. Whoa, she led us here so many years ago. Whoa, and every year our family blessings grow. There's just a lot you simply got to know. So, welcome to the family, Madrigal. The home of the family, Madrigal. We're on our way, where all the people are fantastical and magical. I'm part of the family, Madrigal.
BFM 89.9. It is 7:39. You're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn and Sharmila. Arvin is taking a little break today, but we are about to review the latest from Walt Disney, basically the 60th film that's been produced by the studio, and that is Encanto.
And for all that, right, Encanto, at least for me, kind of flew under the radar a little bit. I remember them announcing the project. I remember the teaser trailer coming out. But then I don't know if it was the pandemic or the fact that, you know, our theater releases have also been oddly staggered. And then the fact that things are being released on streaming as well. I kind of forgot and there wasn't a lot of promotions about it. And therefore, I think I didn't think about it very much. Just happened to watch it because of work. And I must say, I'm so, so glad I did. It was the perfect pick-me-up. It really brightened my entire day, my entire week. I can't stop thinking about the movie.
I loved it. I loved Encanto. And like you, and I suspect like many others, it flew under the radar for me as well. I don't think Encanto has been picked as a big flagship release for Disney this year, perhaps because it's coming alongside all the big Marvel stuff. And, you know, I feel as if I think more about the upcoming Pixar Turning Red than I did about Encanto. But it is such a delight. I would not sleep on it. I think that there aren't that many days of it still being in the cinemas. But once it heads to Disney Plus, as you know it will, I would strongly, strongly, with all my heart, recommend you watch it. So that song, firstly, songs are by Lin-Manuel Miranda, which in and of itself, a great recommendation. But the other thing is, thank you for picking that clip because it helps to set up the story a little bit. There are a lot of madrigals. They are a family in which, to start at the beginning, a young woman, Alma Madrigal, trying to escape her home due to armed conflict, loses her husband. And she has triplets, basically, that she's trying to care for. And where she loses him, at a point in a river, she places the candle down and it kind of builds this magical space for her, including a house, a casita. And with each generation of madrigals, it blesses them with magical powers, with specific things that they're allowed to do, like, I can hear a pin drop from across the way, I'm the strongest woman in the world. All these different things are endowments, right? It's almost like gifts that they're given, except for one, Mirabelle, and she is our hero.
It's, you know, just from that story itself, right, it's a very different Disney film. Firstly, it doesn't have a princess, which I think has become such an expectation these days. It also doesn't, it's kind of about magic, but it's also kind of deeply rooted in real world issues. The thing you talked about, I mean, essentially, it's about asylum seekers, right? It's about people who have to leave their home for whatever reason and find a new home elsewhere. It's also about generational trauma. It's also about family and cultures and how particular cultures might have a very specific way of relating to each other, what family and closeness means, what expectations are. But I'm making it all sound very serious. And the truth is that the film does all of these things with such a joy and you know, so much color and so much beauty. The music is such a big part of it, I have to admit. I love the music by Lin-Manuel, and I think, you know, it's spot on with the emotions. But I think it's just everything about wanting to tell a story that's a little bit different, a little bit unexpected, has worked out so well in this case.
So I think that the lack of a princess and a grand tale makes it feel like a more intimate story, which is appropriate for the kind of story that it's trying to tell. But like you said, I think this is all part of the reason why the marketing didn't fully know what to do with it. It's not a traditional Disney tale. It's much more in the vein of their recent releases, telling smaller, more concentrated, more community-based stories. Except in the case of, say, your Moana, and this has roots in Moana as well. One of the directors actually co-wrote Moana, and Lin-Manuel Miranda has that connection there, of course. But even with Moana, she was a chieftain's daughter. So there was still... not a princess, but kind of a princess. In the case of Mirabelle, though, we meet her at the point where she is kind of the unspoken black sheep of the family. She certainly feels like it because she, during the ceremony in which all the madrigals are endowed with their gifts, received nothing, or so it would seem. And so for that reason, her grandma, the one who escaped and who initially forged this sanctuary to begin with, worries about what that means, right? She's concerned about what it means that now a family member has not been given this gift. What does that mean about the magic? Does that mean she will have to move again? All these complex things, all of which to say, while it's a smaller, more intimate story, and while it's bright and beautiful and the songs are great and the jokes work, it's also actually trying to tell some very, or to talk about some very complex issues.
So you mentioned Mirabelle and you mentioned Alma, but I think what I love the most about this film, about Encanto, is unlike a lot of other Disney films where it has a very clear main character, sub-character, ensemble cast, the madrigals are actually such living, breathing people. It feels like you're on holiday with someone's family where every person is so distinct. Even the ones who don't get so much time on screen end up leaving quite a big impression on you. That opening song we played, which in the film is essentially this beautiful, boisterous number where every member of the madrigal family is introduced, is only the entry point into getting to know these characters. And I think it helps a lot that... I think breaking of the formula, taking a different approach to tell a story, it helps a lot because I think it also depends on the kind of story you're trying to tell. This reminded me a lot of Coco in the sense where it's not about one person. It's actually about a community almost.
I have so much more to say about this film. But like I said, I think we can safely just give it a ringing endorsement. We both really, really loved it. We're talking today about Encanto, which is the 60th film that has been produced by Walt Disney Studios, essentially. And we'd like to hear from you. I mean, is this a movie that you've watched yet? Are you planning to? Are we making you want to, perhaps? You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
We don't talk about Bruno. Talk about Bruno. But it was my wedding day.
It was our wedding day.
We were getting ready and there wasn't a cloud in the sky.
No clouds allowed in the sky.
Bruno walks in with a mischievous grin.
Thunder.
You're telling the story, or am I?
I'm sorry, mi vida, go on.
Bruno says it looks like rain.
Where's the guitar alone? Well, I guess the umbrella.
Married in a hurricane.
What a joyous day, but anyway.
We don't talk about Bruno.
No, 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 no.
We don't talk about Bruno.
BFM 89.9, it is 7:48 and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn and Sharmila. Together we are reviewing Encanto. As we promised, it's quite a busy year-end watching season, oddly enough. A lot of cinematic and streaming releases. Encanto is out in the cinema, perhaps not for very long more. I was thinking that it's actually been flooded out a little bit by your Ghostbusters and your James Bond, which is a pity because it's so great. So we started off with talking quite a bit about Mirabelle, who is our ostensible heroine. But Bruno, the subject of that song, as voiced by John Leguizamo, also plays a hugely important role.
I don't want to give away a lot about Bruno, just because he's one of the most interesting characters in the film. And I think how you discover him is a big deal. But I kind of love that we have a Bruno, and I kind of love what his character and even the family dynamics say about relationships, because I think one of the, I'll confess, I teared up in this film. I teared up the way I would have in a Pixar film. And I think the reason I did is because a lot of this felt real. It felt the way I and many others probably feel about their families, and the way we grow up and change, and our relationships change. And Bruno is the center of a lot of that.
I didn't tear up. I wept. I don't know why.
Okay, me too. Yes.
I don't know why you're trying to downplay the torrent of tears that came out in response to this film. You're right. I actually thought that, okay, let's talk about Bruno for a bit first, because I do want to...
Well, we don't talk about Bruno.
We don't. But I would like to pick up on the Disney-Pixar comparison, because that's one that gets made a lot. But John Leguizamo's performance was wonderful. It was kind of quirky, but not overly so. It was not over the top. And that actually extends to every member of the voice cast. Stephanie Beatriz as Mirabelle is just so lovely. Everybody has all these human touches and quirks. You really feel like, to your point about having that sense of familiarity and intimacy with the family, even though we're not in living in a magical valley in Colombia, I think a lot of it comes down to the story, but also to the way in which the characters are voiced, which has a real humanity and warmth to it. Everybody feels like somebody that you know. And so, yes, that's enough that I can say about Bruno, since we, as you say, do not talk about him. But that Disney Pixar thing is interesting, isn't it? Because this film has a Pixar feel.
It definitely has a Pixar feel. And I'm wondering... It's an interesting direction for Disney to take. And I'm wondering whether in future we're going to see more distinctions being made from Disney in terms of their more sort of tentpole princessy stories and then these kinds of stories. And if that's the case, I don't mind. If we get more stuff like Encanto, if there's space for those kinds of stories, I'm completely on board. I think, though, that what makes this more Pixar than Disney is one of the things I wouldn't give up, which is this focus on the music and the focus on just stunning, beautiful scenes. Because to me, one of the distinctions between Disney animation and Pixar is Disney tends to have these magical moments. You know, there were scenes realized on the screen in this film that were just so beautiful, I really couldn't. Like, I stopped breathing at how beautiful they looked.
You know what I love? Because a lot of the scenes that were that beautiful have their roots in magical realism, which is not something that you always expect to see in a Disney animation, where they tend to deal more with magic, where you see outright displays of people being able to conjure fireworks, or, you know, a very specific form of a little mermaid gaining feet, you know, things like that. Whereas in the case of Encanto, it has its roots in Latin American themes of magic realism that's expressed through the fixation on flowers and plants, for example, which one character has. And even the way that the tight-knit family moves and operates, down to the visual flourishes that you see, whether it's the house, the casita, and the way that it's laid out, or even in character design, in the way in which they dress and the way in which they move. So there's The Latin roots, I think, come through very loud and clear in every which way, especially in that theme of magical realism.
I am so glad you brought that up, because, yes, I think that, when we talk about representing cultures in film or in animation, and I know that you've pointed out, for instance, how Raya was a little flat in that regard, because it kind of lumps together all sorts of things. I think Encanto, perhaps, if I may, does that in the best possible way. It kind of takes influences from Latin culture, from South America, and kind of puts them together in these beautiful ways. And you see touches of it, the magic realism, which is so familiar from Latin American literature is one, but the music and the way how you hear tango one second and salsa another, and just the colors and the way things are realized on screen. I think that this is one of the best things about this push towards more diversity on screen. The fact that we as an audience get to see and experience things that we didn't even know we wanted until we see it on screen in something like this.
Before I bring us down with the box office performance, because it hasn't been that great, I wanted to talk about the music. So we chose clips, I think, from the film quite purposefully, partly because they're just good songs, but also because as you say, the storytelling is so embedded and entwined in the songs in this film, as in most Disney films. And also the songs are, not to put too fine a point on it, bangers. They're all really, really great.
They're so great. And this is a proper, proper musical. It's not even like we have four songs, but, you know, people break out into songs all the time. Storyline progresses through songs. not always something that works, but I think in this it works so well. And I've been listening to the songs on repeat on my Spotify since I watched the film. So if for nothing else, the music is so good. It's vintage Lin-Manuel Miranda.
I have a question for you though, because this is something we haven't talked about. I watched it in the cinema, obviously. And the sound mix in my theater wasn't great. So I struggled quite a bit with catching lyrics. I'm actually looking forward to watching the film again at home with subtitles, but also with my own sound system, because I found that the mix in the theater, I'm not sure what happened, made it very hard to discern the lyrics. And because it is such a musical kind of approach where people are really singing over one another, where people are singing as a way to further narrative, the lyrics actually really matter.
I don't think I had a problem with that, but I must say, yeah, I know. So it might have been a site-specific thing. But I will say, though, that wherever you're watching it, this is one of those that would probably benefit with subtitles, mostly just because of what you said, people sort of bursting in on top of each other and the quickness of some of the lyrics.
So the film hasn't done well. In the box office, it's lagged quite a bit. In fact, they're referencing things like The Good Dinosaur, which just makes me sad because The Good Dinosaur is not one of Disney's best. But that is where the box office performance sits. I think, though, that this perhaps has more to do with a lack of desire for animation than it is any sort of consensus on the movie itself. Although this idea of animation, it's funny, right? Because it's the highest form of escapism, and yet it's often the thing that people don't feel they need to go to the cinema to watch.
Which is such a pity in the case of this, because honestly, this looks so great on the large screen. You feel like you're diving into pools of flowers or magical landscapes that they create behind doors. If you can watch it in the cinema, I would really recommend this. I think the other thing is actually something I'm hearing from a number of people who I know alternatively would have wanted to watch this in the cinema. One is pandemic, of course. Two is they can't bring their kids to the cinema. Or I think now they've lifted some of the restrictions, but they don't want to, or they don't feel it's safe or whatever. And so they want to watch it with their kids. And now the alternative is that it's going to be out on Disney Plus soon anyway. So a lot of people are waiting to just watch it at home. So I do feel like Encanto has suffered a little bit in sitting in this weird space of a confluence of timing and also this availability of you don't actually need to go to the cinema to watch it. And I kind of feel bad for the film.
Me too. Which is why I just wanted to say that I think this is one of my favorite new Disneys. I really, really loved it. And I don't want to make it sound more ponderous than we already have, but I'm so glad that this exists for kids to watch. It makes it's beautiful, it's funny, it's fun, and yet it also makes very complicated points about generational trauma, about the weight of expectation and perfection, about what it means to be a tight-knit family trying to operate with one another, about the fear of having to move once more, about displacement, and it does all these things in such a lovely, subtle way.
I think that no matter what age you are, you can be an adult, you can be a child. And if you watched Encanto, you'd find something that would resonate with you simply because, especially if you come from an Asian family or cultures where in general you have these large extended family members that you see often, I think there's something for everyone. It's not, you said ponderous. I don't think
it comes across. It's not
yes,
them.
I know.
That's on us.
No, because honestly, I felt light and happy and just filled with joy after I finished this film.
Albeit red-eyed, embarrassingly red-eyed.
Yeah, yeah. That is the thing. Wearing a mask and crying in the cinema is not fun.
So make sure you watch it at home, guys. Watch just the point is watch it anywhere. But prepare yourselves. Don't say that we didn't warn you. Fresh box of tissues, all that kind of stuff. We've been talking today about Encanto, which is the 60th film from Disney. We'd like to hear from you. Have you seen it? Do you plan to watch it? WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.